Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 442 for September 15th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
First day we had him in, we had him trying to use a hammer driver and making sure he doesn't burst his finger on the first day and stuff like that, and then progressively work on from that.
Last week, while I was in Ireland for Middleton Distillery's Stillhouse dedication, I ran into our good friend Jer Buckley, Middleton's fifth-generation cooper, and the subject of the very first Whiskey Cast HD episode a couple of years ago. Back then, Jer was hoping to get an apprentice to follow in his footsteps. Now, 21-year-old Killian O'Mahony is starting his four-year-long apprenticeship. We'll hear from both of them on this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, I'll have my tasting notes for a whiskey that was never intended to be made, Wild Turkey's Forgiven, all on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with this week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. First off, a sad note to report. Lincoln Henderson, the longtime master distiller for Brown-Forman and most recently the creator of Angel's Envy Bourbon, passed away this past Tuesday night at the age of 75. During his 40 years at Brown-Forman, he helped create the Gentleman Jack and Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Tennessee whiskeys, along with Woodford Reserve Bourbon. He retired from Brown-Forman in 2004, then started working on Angel's Envy with his son Wes and his grandson Kyle a couple of years later. The original version was released in 2010, and ironically, plans had been in the works for some time to release a cask strength version this week. Of course, those plans will go forward, but with some sadness. Our condolences go to the entire Henderson family. Back in July, we lost another legend of bourbon, Elmer T. Lee. At the time, he was one of only three living bourbon distillers to have a whiskey named after him, along with Parker Beam and Jimmy Russell. I've received a number of emails since then wondering whether Buffalo Trace would continue to produce Elmer T. Lee single barrel bourbon. This week I was on the phone with Buffalo Trace master distiller Harlan Wheatley, and he confirmed that not only will they continue to produce it, but they're even more passionate about it than ever. They never said anything at the time, because they thought it was obvious that they'd keep making it. Of course, the reason I was talking with Harlan was because they announced this year's lineup for the Buffalo Trace Antique Collection this week. In most years, the George T. Stagg Uncut and Unfiltered Bourbon would be one of the strongest whiskies of the year. This year, it's only the third most powerful in the antique collection. The 2013 Stagg comes in at 64.1%, or 128.2 proof. Both the William LaRue Weller Wheated Bourbon and the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye came in at higher proofs, but as with all whiskies, it's the taste that matters.
We were, pretty excited again this year. We got some really good results, especially, the Stagg was excellent. The Eagle Rare was really good. You know, the William LaRue kind of surprised us this year. Every year it seems like one or two of them always surprise us, but they're all really good again this year, and we're very, very happy with that. So
this year's Stagg, though, is a bit different. Normally, the Stagg is the most powerful one in the bunch. What happened this year?
Right. Yeah, we went around the different warehouses, and one of the things that we know as we go lower in the warehouse, you know, it doesn't evaporate as fast. And a lot of those barrels that we picked were in the lower floors. And, instead of raising the proof quite a bit, it just went up to about 128 proof, which in reality just means that it mellowed smoothly, you know, and it didn't go up as much, but the flavor was really good, and we're really happy with that. So,
and what's the deal with this year's Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye?
Well, that was another one. It was really good. Came out of Warehouse K, I think, and it was about the same proof as Stag, 128, but again, really good flavor, and we're really happy with that. It was a little bit higher in the warehouse. So I guess over that, you know, while it was aging, it picked up some really good flavor.
Rounding out the lineup, the Eagle Rare 17-year-old bourbon. Of course, the label may say 17 years old, but this year's edition is actually 19 years old. It was distilled in the spring of 1993. All five will be available at U.S. retailers later this month. In other news, I reported last week that Brooklady was entering into the travel retail market with four expressions. None of them have age statements, and that led to rumors that Brooklady was dropping the Laddy 10, along with the 16 and 22-year-old expressions, the only three that currently carry age statements. What's more, the Brooklady website had an oversight for the last week or two and wasn't showing the Laddy 10. So, to get the full story, I talked with Brooklady Managing Director Simon Coughlin.
I think people are sort of a little bit hung up on three of the releases, the 10, the 16, and the 22. As you know, we've been at the sort of forefront of non-age statements or not focusing on the age statement. You know, we talk about the tyranny of age on our website. We've always talked about that. You know, we think sort of age statements are a bit of a lazy way of describing whiskey, when actually there's so much more to it. As you know, so we've had things like the Isle of Barley, the Bear Barley, which are very clear age statements. They're vintages almost. And we also, with things like the Octomore, we don't lead with the fact that it's a five-year-old, but it does say that it's a five-year-old. So, Black Art, is the current one, is a 23-year-old. So, you know, we use age statements, but we don't lead with them. We're not going to be leading with the Laddy 10 going forward. We've always led in the past with Rocks, things like Laddy Classic. So the Laddy 10 is going to be available, but it's going to be available on allocation. In fact, ever since 2010 or 2011, when we had our first 10-year-old, the launch that you were at, in fact, Mark, it's since then, it's always been on allocation, and it will continue to be on allocation.
But that was the flagship whiskey that you guys celebrated the 10th anniversary with. Is there some emotional discomfort in sort of at least scaling that back so quickly? Because we had sort of assumed that once you got to this point 2 years later, that might get bumped up to a 12-year-old expression going forward.
I think I may have mentioned this when we spoke before around the sale of the company. I think at the time, the getting to that point where we were 10 years old was a huge sort of emotional moment for all of us. And I think that was it was a statement that we'd arrived in many respects to the industry and all of that. And so at that time, you know, we had a 10-year-old, but actually I think it was more about the success of the business and that we'd got there. And obviously it's a fantastic dram, and, you know, it will continue to be a fantastic dram. And you know, with Brooklady, I mean, things are always changing a little bit, and that will continue to change. So we're not going to become boring all of a sudden. So who's to say there won't be another age of the 10 in due course? But it certainly isn't currently in the plan. But a lot of things we do at Brooklady, there isn't a plan for the next year or the year after. There's no negativity about not being the forefront of the brand. As I say, it's been on allocation ever since we released it in 2011, and that will continue to be the case.
But it will still be available along with the older expressions, right?
Yeah, I mean, the older expressions are a little bit difficult, simply because we don't have much old stock. We inherited the older stocks with the distillery when we bought it back in 2001. There isn't much of it, so we've got to protect it, and we've got to look after it. So, you know, they will be available in very small volumes, but they're not going to last forever. in all honesty, we've so enjoyed doing the younger whiskies, whether it was Rocks, And things like the Laddie Classic that might have a little bit of older whiskey in it, but predominantly it's younger spirit. We love the Isle of Barley and the freshness of it and the crispness of it, where the wood isn't sort of too dominant. And particularly because we're focusing so much more on the ingredients and the barley now, that it's that we think is so interesting for us, that we want to showcase that. We believe that it's something very special for the consumers.
By the way, Simon told us earlier this year that he wanted to double the distillery's production this year. Brooklady is on pace to do just that and could increase it even more without having to add new equipment. They're still on a 5-day production schedule and could go to 7 days if needed. Brooklady recently renewed its planning permits for the proposed Port Charlotte distillery, but that project is on hold for the time being. Meanwhile, there are plans for what would be Islay's 9th distillery. My sources indicate that a Kilhoman-style farm distillery may be up and running by the spring of 2015. The proposed Gartbrecht distillery is to be built about 3 miles south of Beaumont near the Islay Airport. A formal announcement is expected later this year, along with more details on who may be behind the plans. New whiskeys hitting the market. Tullamore Dew has released a cask strength Irish whiskey exclusively in the airports at Dublin and Shannon, at least for now. Phoenix is likely to receive additional distribution in more global markets after the exclusivity ends at the end of the month. Beaumont is releasing the Devil's Casks. It's a cask strength single malt with a heavy influence from first fill sherry casks. Glenmurray is out with a limited edition 25-year-old single malt finished in port wood casks. The Whiskey Exchange will be the only retailer with a 1953 Glenfarclas single cask bottling, commemorating the 60th anniversary of Queen Elizabeth's coronation that year. Just 60 crystal decanters are available at a price of £6,000, or about $9,500 each. Finally, hunting season is coming up in North America, and Early Times is releasing a special bottle for hunters who don't want the glare of a stainless steel flask to scare off their prey. It's a camouflage-covered bottle, but it will stand out on your whiskey shelf. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
This week I'm in St. Mary's, Georgia, just a couple of miles north of the Florida state line. No whiskey-related reasons, though, purely a family-related trip. Our grandson Hunter celebrates his first birthday this week, and we came down for his birthday party over the weekend. Of course, it's also the perfect time for the annual Family and Friends episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. Our son-in-law Colton and several of his fellow United States Marines sat down with me to taste a few whiskeys. You can hear the conversation on this month's WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. It's available at WhiskeyCast.com and through iTunes. Just halfway through a busy month of travel, though. From here, I'm heading up to Bardstown, Kentucky for the annual Kentucky Bourbon Festival this week. 2 weeks from now, I'll be in Grimsby, Ontario for 40 Creek Distillery's annual Whiskey Weekend. Then, it's over to Boston for Whiskey Live on October 2nd. After that, I might finally get to spend a few days at home. By the way, if you're at one of these events, I hope you'll stop me and say hello. I'd love to meet you. Don't forget about the Bourbon Heritage Month special in the WhiskeyCast Photo Gallery. With every order of $100 or more through the end of September, you'll receive a free 11x14-inch print of The Rickhouse. And I'll donate 20% of all orders this month to the ALS Association's Parker Beams Promise of Hope Fund. You'll find the gallery in the mall section at WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Heard from Mickey Hammond in Thomasville, Georgia, a couple of hours west of here. He had a comment on our interview 2 weeks ago with Preston Van Winkle, especially when Preston talked about tasting whiskeys. Here's what Mickey had to say. His answer was like mine. I can't taste hardly anything in the whiskeys. I either like them or I don't. He mentioned saddle leather and I laughed. Like wine drinkers, I really question some of it, especially when no one ever really claims they taste the same thing. I get Whiskey Magazine and the folks in there never have the same findings. Well, you have to keep in mind that everyone's tastes are a bit different. Smell and taste are based a lot on mental memories and our own experiences, and two different people are very likely to have very different senses. Justin Victor posted this note on our Facebook page. Just had my own whiskey fairies bring me a bottle of Monkey Shoulder from Texas. I was surprised to see that the ABV was 43%, while the bottles I have that were purchased in London are a mere 40%. Anyone have any information as to why they upped the alcohol for the U.S. release? I'm not complaining, just curious. Well, I took Justin's question to Freddie May, the Monkey Shoulder U.S. brand ambassador, and he responded that when William Grant & Sons decided to export Monkey Shoulder to the U.S., the idea was to get bartenders to use it in cocktails. So they did some research asking some bartenders whether 40% or 43% ABV would be better for them. The answer was 43%, so that's what Grant's did, at least for the U.S. Finally, James Andrews asked on the Malt Maniacs and Friends Facebook page for suggestions on good whiskey bars in the Atlanta area. A couple of us recommended Mac McGee's Irish Pub in the suburb of Decatur. James posted this note a couple of days later. Checked it out, and it was wonderful. Over 500 whiskeys, maybe 150-ish single malts. I had two flights, Aaron 14, the Laddie 10, Springbank 10, Johnny Walker Green, Redbreast 12, and Yamazaki 12. None disappointed, but the Redbreast was surprising how good it was. Well, James, glad you had a good experience there, and if I were heading north through Atlanta, I'd stop by Mac McGee's myself. If you have a question, a suggestion, or even a bar recommendation, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at whiskeycast.com, or you can email me directly. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker, on the web at johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival is this week in Bardstown with events all week long. Sam Snead's House of Whiskey in Auckland, New Zealand has a Glendronach tasting on Wednesday. The Astor Center in New York City has a single cask expressions evening on Thursday night. The first ever Tennessee Whiskey Festival will be next Saturday in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mike Beach will be leading a Filson Bourbon Academy class on the 24th at the Columbia Yacht Club in Chicago. That's the first in a new series of traveling Filson Bourbon Academy classes that Mike will be leading around the U.S. Whiskey Fest San Francisco is coming up on the 27th, and Whiskey Live Boston again is on October 2nd. Those are just a few of the more than 300 different whiskey events on the calendar at whiskeycast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. The annual Laphroaig Live webcast is coming up on the 26th, and you can get all of the details at laphroaig.com/live. While you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
Whiskey Cast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Tim Brennan, retired engineering supervisor, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I've worked with Irish distillers for 40 years. I was born in Middleton and went to school in Middleton and then joined a company in 1971. Traditions in the old distillery were if you were involved in a very dirty job, you then got a half glass of Redbreast. They were the perks in the old distillery. We had one guy there who was particularly fond of his glass of Redbreast. And in order to go to the manager of the warehouse, he would get a really dirty bag of dust and he'd shake it over himself so that he looked so dirty. And he would head off over to the manager and say, "Mr. Daly, here I am. I've had a terrible dirty job for the morning. Look at the cut of me. Any chance of getting a half one?" And he'd duly get his half one, come back, change his clothes, and he was fine again.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
This week on Whiskey Cast In Depth, we're catching up with Jer Buckley. He's the fifth generation cooper at Ireland's Middleton Distillery. When we first met Jer a couple of years ago on the very first episode of Whiskey Cast HD, he told us that he was hoping to get an apprentice to pass along the secrets of coopering to. When I was at Middleton last week for the dedication of the distillery's new stillhouse, Jer was one of the first people I ran into, and his new apprentice, Killian O'Mahony, was right behind him. We went into the distillery's restaurant for a cup of coffee, and this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth.
Well, it was a tough process to get Gillian. We went through four interview processes before we finally made our selection. So it's been tough on Gillian to go through all that. He had to do a demonstration on his craft that he's learned so far. So he's actually done a lot of work on furniture making and stuff. So for me then, working with Gillian, it's a whole different process for Gillian. All new tools, all new techniques. Very different to the world he would have known in furniture making. So it's been exciting. For us here in Middleton, and I was very anxious that Killian would work in a large cooperage and work with other coopers. So I'm thinking on that line, we have him at the moment working in a large cooperage in Scotland for about a year. And then he'll come home here for about maybe another year and then spend about 6 months again in Howreth, where our sherry butts are made. And then sometime later, he'll spend another 6 months in Kentucky, in Kelvin Cooperages, working, making casks there. So he'll have a full-rounded view of the coopering world, both from America and from Europe and from Ireland and Scotland. So he'll have a lot more knowledge and experience than I would have ever gained. So it's really exciting for him, and I'm very excited to have the process go ahead. And after maybe over 1,000 years, 1,500 years of coopering in Ireland, is going to continue for another generation.
How are you teaching him about the old stuff, about the old ways that you showed us in the first WhiskeyCast HD episode a couple of years ago?
Well, one of the first things we managed to do is we got one of the older coopers in here a couple of months ago, and showed him how to use an axe, and he would have made casks by hand himself. So he used an axe, showed him how that was on hammer driver, talked about the old coopers, the old experiences, a lot of the fun and the crack that goes on in a cooperage. Talked about some of the families involved in coopering, Quinlans and Foleys and Regans and so on. So first day we had him in, we had him trying to use a hammer and driver and making sure he doesn't burst his finger on the first day and stuff like that. And then progressively work on from that.
When we did the first WhiskeyCast HD episode, you showed me that hammer that one of your colleagues had given you that had the perfect wear spots and the perfect hammer strike spots on the driver. How's he doing as far as getting those perfect strikes down?
Well, the first time he came in, he was pausing an awful lot when he was hammering the hammer. But then when I looked at him, say, yesterday we were tightening casks here in Middleton around the yard and stuff, and he's got his own style. Like, that's the one thing. With coopering, no matter what tool you use, everybody's got their own style and their own rhythm. So Killian now is starting to develop his own rhythm with his hammer driver. So he's getting a lot more fluid, a lot more energy in behind the hits on the driver. So he's getting there. He's only had a couple of months, but he's getting there.
The advantage of youth too, right?
Pardon?
The advantage of youth too, right?
The advantage of youth and the excitement. And I know he was very enthusiastic and very excited to get such a position. It's a very tough role to get. It's so hard to become a cooper these days. But he's a finely built lad, so he has the strength and everything else to do the whole thing. So I'm very excited for the future.
Killian, what made you interested in getting into coopering in the first place?
Well, I have a long background in furniture making and carpentry, so I've been passionate about woodworking and working with wood, especially white oak, for a very long time. But I heard about the interview process come up, so I said I'd go for it because the distillery that we're actually based in here in Middleton, my great-great-grandfather was actually the chief blacksmith in the forgery back in the 1800s. So there was a lot of family pride and a lot of passion to go along with it, with the coopering aspect as well. And there is coopering in my family back a couple of hundred years ago as well, so along with the passion and the hard work, because once I'm working, I'm happy, so just pride and passion, so I went for it then.
Define long background in woodworking, because you look like you're about 18 years old, which means you probably couldn't have had that long a background.
Well, I left school early. Like, I'm 21 now, but I left school early to get into carpentry and furniture making because I always knew I was going to end up in a craft to do with wood. So I started, I think, when I was about 14. And I was freelancing carpentry, and I went and got a degree then in furniture making. So to say a long time, I'd say it was about half of my life so far. So
Can you see yourself doing this for the rest of your life?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. I can't wait. I was when I met the other cooper that John introduced me to a couple of months ago, to see the pride and the passion still that was on his face at the age of over 70 when he had a hammer and driver back in his hand. I could see that I was going to have that look on my face when I'm old and grey as well. So,
have you been able to make a cask yet?
No, what we're doing over, because I'm based in Scotland in the cooperage at the moment, training in a bigger cooperage, as Joe said. But what we're doing is a lot of repairs. So we get in broken barrels and we take out the staves and we use just the traditional tools and the traditional work to fix the cask and send it out again. Which is good because I'm used to a lot of machines and a lot of computer-aided drafting and stuff like that. But now it's just into the traditional side, which is the big difference, but I'm loving every bit of it. So
tell me about learning how to use that axe the first day.
Well, it was a bit dangerous because I did, as George said.
Because that is a beastly looking tool. It's
quite dangerous, but I was always being shown how to use it, and I had a close call, all right, with the tip of my finger, but it was safe enough. So it's just a lot of training and a lot of practice because it is a very highly skilled craft, and George is very highly skilled at it, and so are all the coopers. You have to be, and you have to be fast. So I will get there, I'll learn. But I'm excited about learning. I'm excited about the process. Stay away from the dangerous ones for the moment.
How long will your apprenticeship last?
It's a four-year apprenticeship. The first 2 years are traveling, so I'll be between Spain, Scotland, and Kentucky. But I'm back for the final 2 years in Ireland then, which are. But I'll be working then till at least the age of 65, coopering.
Have you told him what comes at the end of the apprenticeship yet?
I think he has some idea what's coming at this over 600-year tradition of trussing, which is basically we'll put him into a sherry butt. We then traditionally would pour everything that's available in the shop, from waste water to any remnants of whiskey to charcoal, over him, turn it downside and roll him quickly up and down the shop, and then come out and have a big celebration. It's a big family day as well. His family would come in, all the workers around the plant would come. It's a celebration and a tradition. So that'll be interesting. And that's the one you're going to have to come back for, Mark. That's the one you're going to have to tape, and the tradition lives on. So,
what did you know about this little tradition of trussing beforehand?
It wasn't mentioned to me up until about a couple of weeks ago. In front of the other cooper, and they're all laughing and having a good joke about it, so we'll have to see. I'm going to forget about it again until I think I finish the apprenticeship.
What does it mean to you to be a part of literally Irish whiskey heritage going forward and carrying this on for a generation? Because I know when I met Jer a couple of years ago, he was worried about not having somebody to pass the skills along to.
Yeah, it's like there is a lot of pride in it for me, and there's a small bit of pressure, but I'm ready for it, and I think Irish whiskey as well deserves for a proud tradition like coopering to be carried on, because it is instilled not only globally but in Irish culture. Like back in the 1800s, there was over 11,000 coopers employed as Ireland, and it's down to 4 now, and I'm the first apprentice in 37 years. So it has to be carried on, and I'm excited to be the person to have the honour of doing it. So
nobody else has an apprentice cooper going right now, right?
No, Killian is working with, it's more or less a dedicated coopering school above in Scotland. So there's quite a few apprentice first year coopers starting as well. And Scotland are doing very well in hiring new apprentice coopers. So he's rolling in with them, so he's learning with them as well. And the plan here in Middleton is to maybe take on a further apprentice cooper within 2 to 3 years. And keep it rolling out that way. So coopering is starting to make a comeback because the whiskey industry is doing so well, and I think everybody recognises the craft of coopering is essential for the upkeep of casks, the maintenance, the repair, the make of casks. So the future looks bright. The whiskey industry is doing well, and coopering is doing well.
You had mentioned that your family history includes time here at Middleton. How much did the family tell you about this when you were growing up? And what did they say when you said, I'm going to take an apprenticeship at Middleton?
Well, growing up, we always knew that there was a tie to Middleton and the distillery. With a lot of families in Ireland, it's always tied to whiskey and the distilleries. So there was a lot of mother's side based in Middleton, but we didn't really meet them. We just heard that our great-great-grandfather was a blacksmith, and it was kind of stopped there. But when they found out, I waited until I got into the second interview to tell the family, just so it was kind of real and it was a bit more there. But they backed me all the way because there was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of happiness that not only I was carrying on coopering, but I was carrying on and restarting a family tradition of working in Middleton Distillery and with Irish whiskey. So they did a lot of research with me, and they backed me all the way, and they were trying to get any family ties to help me to get into the distillery. So there's a lot of excitement, and there still is.
Did you grow up around here?
No, I didn't grow up around Middleton, but I actually moved back very close to Middleton a couple of years ago, and I've been living here for the past 3 to 4 years.
Where did you grow up before?
Blarney, out by Blarney Castle. So there's another bit of history there somewhere.
So how much whiskey have you had the chance to drink? I mean, you're only 21. I know the drinking age is 18 in Ireland, but how much experience do you have with whiskey personally?
Well, being Irish, whiskey is always in the background no matter what, but I have to train my palate as well as my hands to do coopering. So I've gone on a few whiskey tastings, and especially over in Scotland, I've had the chance to taste different kinds of scotch and stuff, but Irish whiskey will always be in the family, so happy days.
While Killian may get to learn to use the old tools, he'll have much more modern equipment to work with. But if you'd like to see how Jarre built barrels back in the day, you can still watch that very first episode of WhiskeyCast HD. It's available at YouTube, iTunes, and at WhiskeyCast.com. And that's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. Now, the new Tullamore Dew Distillery is under construction in County Offaly, about an hour west of Dublin. But as it has for many years, the whiskey that goes into Tullamore Dew is produced at Middleton, including the new cask strength Phoenix I mentioned earlier. It's bottled at 55% ABV. The nose is creamy and smooth with hints of malt, brown sugar, ginger, and a touch of grassiness. The taste is full and rich with a good balance of malt, cinnamon, ginger, allspice, and honey, and the finish is long and smooth. I'm scoring Tullamore Dew Phoenix a 93. Writer's Tears comes from the same family that produces the Irishman whiskies, but it's an unusual blend of pot still whiskey from Middleton and single malt from Bushmills. It's bottled at 40% ABV. The nose has notes of clove, mild cinnamon, cereal grains, and a good maltiness, and hints of burnt straw and oak. The taste is oily, thick, and full-bodied with good spicy notes of cinnamon and black pepper, dark chocolate and caramel underneath with toasted oak and a subtle maltiness. The finish is long, smooth, and spicy with a good balance. I'm scoring Writer's Tears a 92. And finally, I mentioned Wild Turkey's Forgiven a couple of weeks ago. It was a happy accident of sorts, created when some of the guys at the distillery screwed up and vatted some straight rye whiskey together with bourbon. Eddie Russell wasn't happy with the guys until he tasted it and forgave them, thus the name Forgiven. It's bottled at 45.5% ABV. The nose has a great oakiness with vanilla, honey, caramel, and molasses. It's very rich and smooth, too. The taste is spicy, intense, and powerful with cinnamon, black pepper, honey, vanilla, oak, and dark chocolate notes. And the finish is smooth with a good spicy touch of cinnamon, honey, and molasses underneath. It's an excellent whiskey. I'm scoring Wild Turkey Forgiven a 92. I've added these tasting notes to the searchable list of more than 1,000 different whiskeys at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news, the calendar of events, your voice, and much more, including the WhiskeyCast photo gallery and this month's Bourbon Heritage Month special. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you this week from St. Mary's, Georgia. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.